This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 15th of August, 1951. The title of this lecture is The Tone Scale. This tape is 70 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
The basic emotions, then, of which we are speaking and with which we are dealing in the tone scale will be found to be only a few in number. First, there's the emotion which you could generally call happiness, lack of a better term. And then you have a level of emotion which is a reserved attitude. There you have dignity. There's a certain reservation from happiness. People can rather sense, by the way, when they observe this emotion, that somebody is being just a little bit afraid to reach toward something. Just a little bit frightened of reaching toward something. That's called conservatism. It actually seems to be an emotional state. Now, below this level, we get boredom. Boredom where nothing is wrong, but nothing is happening. A fellow has fallen into the horrible state of affairs of the goals are just a little bit unattainable, and the pain threats are not particularly present, but he's not going anywhere, he's not running from anything, and he's not going toward anything, he's sort of idling in one spot. Well, that's boredom. And the next one below this is antagonism. When you drive a person who is bored, when you try to drive him in any direction with anything, he'll be just a little antagonistic towards you. That's because you've reduced him slightly by applying pressure to him. Now, below this, antagonism, if pressed a little harder, will turn into anger. And a person who is angry can be solidly enough threatened so that he demonstrates fear. Fear, threatened, pushed, pressed too much, will become grief. That is, the inability to escape from fear, or the inability to escape from something which is a fearful object, or a loss which cannot be contemplated, brings on grief. Grief, driven too hard, becomes apathy. The way the tone scale was initially discovered was by observation of pre-clears undergoing Dianetic auditing. In auditing, the physical moments of physical pain of a past period may be returned to and re-experienced. The pain isn't as heavy as it was at the time. But if it's re-experienced several times over, the pain itself reduces, and the material which accompanied the pain ceases to be aberrating. That is a basic source of aberration. Moments of physical pain, a great deal of punishment, accompanied with their perceptions, that causes an aberration. The pain compels, then, the behavior of an individual unless he seeks to avoid further pain of that type. Now, it so happens that if you discover one of these incidents where the individual had been very severely injured, you'll find this individual, the emotional tone of the incident in the deepest and severest injuries was uniformly apathy. He found, however, that if you went over this incident once and it became just that much lighter and that much less effective, that you'd come up into grief. The person had experienced some grief about this thing. He'd talk about is lost and how sad it was and how it was all hopeless anyway. And if you ran it again, that is, went through it again, had the person recount it once more, re-experiencing the pain again, you'd find, or twice more, he'd come up to fear. That is to say, he'd be afraid that the thing would happen again. In apathy, a person is not afraid. He'd be afraid of some of the things he would, if his mother had been associated with it or she'd more or less caused it, something of that sort, he would be afraid of mother, and at the same time he'd be propitiative toward her. He would say, I shouldn't have been so mean to poor mother, so forth and so on. Very strange that at that level he's quite propitiative, and he's very concerned that he has not hurt mother, and he loves her after all. He's a little bit anxious about the whole thing. So you run it once more, and he says, mother, and starts to take off. By this time, the pain is very much lightened, and he experiences anger. And he gets very angry at the people who have done this to him, whoever they are. He demonstrates the anger. You go through it some more times, and the anger damps down to an antagonism. After antagonism, he says he's bored with it. He doesn't want to go through it anymore, something of the sort. The auditor is very foolish when he leaves an engram in boredom, because there's two more tones above boredom. The thing is not fully discharged. If it's left at boredom, you have to run it again. And if you run it again, all of a sudden, the fellow says, well, I guess it isn't so bad. It couldn't have been so bad after all, and so on. And it's all right, and I'm very happy about it. And so you run it a couple of more times, and all of a sudden he starts to laugh. He's perfectly happy about this. It was gruesome when it started out, but he's perfectly happy about it. And he stays that way about that incident. And he passes up uniformly up this tone scale. And not an occasional preclear does this, but the preclears that you run who have emotional freedom, that can freely express what emotion there is, they go up this line. Now, sometimes the incident starts with fear, goes up into anger, skips to here, and hits here. In other words, it has gone up so rapidly over two or three of these tones at a clip that you haven't closely observed them. But this is the uniform pattern, so that's the tone scale. Now, in the business of living, individuals get hurt. The more an individual's been hurt, and I mean physical pain now, punishment in general, the more he's been hurt, the more he is liable to find the environment something he has to guard against. In other words, you might say basically the experience of being hurt tends to alert an individual thereafter to the fact that he can be hurt. Now, the amount of physical pain he's experienced establishes the amount of fear he has of that environment that may hurt him. You get a situation, in other words, where the little boy constantly, consistently is denied the nickel, up to the point where he tells a lie, and then he gets the nickel. So he'll go through this whole cycle many times until he tells the lie and gets the nickel. Now, he isn't being educated into it. He's not doing this willfully. He's challenging a factor in his environment up to the point where he actually has to come up to fear of this individual in order to cure something. You're asking the child to run the tone scale. Well, the child will run the full tone scale. But remember that every time he goes into such a contest as this, it's being demonstrated to him that the environment is not quite friendly to him. So if the environment isn't quite friendly to him, he'll eventually go from boredom and tell a lie to get the nickel. Then he starts skipping these bands. He's been punished for being angry too many times. He doesn't get angry anymore. He just holds in this level. You might say he has a fixed response toward one of his parents, and that response is fear. So he doesn't tell the truth anymore. Now, this is from two sources. One, he has discovered this to be a working method of procuring things he thinks he needs from his environment. But he has been fixed into an emotional state with regard to a part of his environment. Now, as he begins to live, as his life broadens, more and more situations are analogous to the situations he had with his parents. He gets up to a point, maybe well above this, when he gets free of his family, but he'll dive back down to it again. In other words, his fixed response all the rest of his life could be the response of fear. He can be anxious about his environment. He has to lie to everyone. He gives the same, more or less, pattern response. You might say he's stuck on the tone scale. Now, in such a way, an individual, in trying to get things and in trying to thrust things away from him, has only been reduced down as far as antagonism. As soon as he got antagonistic, he procured what he wanted, or what he didn't want went away from him. We just put this on very, very simple modus operandi. And he got finally fixed on antagonism. He didn't bother to come down from happiness to antagonism. He doesn't go up to happiness. His response to the environment, going and coming, is antagonism. He's fixed. He's stuck on the tone scale at antagonism. Here is the antagonistic man. If he didn't have too much physical pain, if he found out that he was in good control of his environment, if he was able to postulate and reach his goals in life, so on, he could stay up there pretty well. But the higher you get up this thing, the more fluid a person can be, the more response he is capable of. Now, in the same way, an individual can be find out that the only way he got anything from life was by crying for it or begging for sympathy. He'll descend down this tone scale to sympathy, and there he procures or fends off. And he keeps going through this cycle. Where does he stop? He stops in grief. Grief obtains. Furthermore, the physical pain he has experienced has put him in grief. He is actually beyond the point of being afraid, and he is expecting to die in his environment. When these things begin to compare, this individual will be, you might say, stuck on the tone scale of grief. Apathy is something else. Nobody obtains anything in apathy, but the person has run this whole gamut so often, has found out that nothing worked, has been unable to fend off the pain of his environment, has had a great deal of it, doesn't expect much from the physical universe. He knows he can't carry forward very far, and he's not going to be able to reach any goals, and so he's apathetic about what he does, and so on. He gets to that point. Now, from all of its methods of derivation, you find out that each one of these levels of operation has its own behavior pattern. Angry men do certain things. You can expect an angry man to break things. You can expect him to be untruthful. You can expect him to try to dominate people around him by shouting at them, by ordering them, by, in general, and threatening to punish them by being abusive. You know the pattern of an angry man. You also would know the pattern of a person who is afraid, the person who is afraid to tell the truth, a person who is afraid to face the real facts of any case. Same thing, isn't it? He doesn't even face the facts. He doesn't bother to come close to the facts before he substitutes some facts for them very rapidly. But he doesn't have to face reality, and then he'll tell a lie about the facts he's already figured out. He starts going very wide from reality because reality is very dangerous. Matter, energy, space, and time, organisms in his environment, in other words, are dangerous to him to a point where he is constantly afraid. If he's constantly afraid, he has a definite pattern reaction. He doesn't dare make a frontal attack on anything or anybody. He has to come around the back door. He can never walk up to anybody and punch him in the nose. He's got to go at it some other fashion. He's got to go and tell Joe that Bill said so-and-so that make Joe mad enough to punch Bill in the nose. There's covert hostility. There is also a whole category of behavior. People who are afraid behave in that fashion. The individual who is in grief can only be salvaged by sympathy. Therefore, he must impose upon others around him. He has to impose upon them one way or the other for his own survival. He feels that he cannot survive unless he is in grief, unless he is sick, and so forth. The person in apathy, his method of handling people is just to pretend he's dead. And then, you see, that's a very good mechanism. Soldier goes over the top, bullets flying thick and fast. Soldier falls flat on his face and lies there, stiff. Somebody comes along, kicks him. They say, he's dead, and they pass along to somebody else. The enemy bullets don't hit him. He's in good shape. By accepting the actual fact of death, he becomes dead. And so, dangerous things go away and leave him alone. And people use this as a whole pattern and philosophy in life. If I'm just dead enough, nobody will bother me. You can find this individual. He sells papers down on the street corner. He's dead. His conversation will be along the line, I'm not dangerous. I'm no menace to you. I'm no menace to life. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do anything. Therefore, you needn't attack me. I'm dead. And you say to this fellow, we got a big enthusiastic project, and we're all going to do this and that. And this fellow says, doesn't bother me. I'm dead. In other words, trying to get a rise out of him is almost impossible. He's got to carry this role all the way through. Supposing you tell this fellow in grief, well, we've got this great big project and we're going to so-and-so. He says it's all hopeless anyway, because you see, he's very close to death, he thinks. And it's all very hopeless and there's no use going on, and life is pretty much of a trial anyway, and you can go on with your project, but me, life is pretty close to over with me, and I'll just sit here and feel sorry for myself. All right, there's your grief response, standard response. He'll answer everything across life this way. Person who's afraid, you say, we got this big enthusiastic project we're going to... You sure you've asked the police? You say, oh, yes, we asked them, and we've got the mayor and so forth. Well, he'll exhaust all sorts of reasons why this can't be an enthusiastic project. Because, you see, you've come along and you've asked him to attack something. He can't attack anything. He's afraid. He's liable to be killed. So he's got all these reasons why you can't attack this, because he's liable to be killed. He's afraid. His life is under continual threat. He will nullify anything you tell him that is enthusiastic. Anytime you're enthusiastic, he'll nullify you. Furthermore, he'll nullify anybody above the tone scale above him. He's got to. He'll work on a person who is angry. He'll say to this person who is angry, you always get into rages, don't you? But I know that you can beat me and kill me, but you always do get into rages, and I'm sorry that you do. And I forgive you. Or something of the sort. And then when the person who is normally angry about things in general gets around this person who is afraid of things in general, why, this angry person doesn't happen to be very angry at the moment. He's sitting there snarling a little bit about the government and so on. And he says, you know, I'd like to go down to Washington and show those people a thing or two. And this person who is afraid says, oh, boy, maybe I can get him down this tone scale just a little bit. So I don't think you'd do well in Washington. The fellow who's angry all the time says, what? I wasn't even talking to you. But the fellow says, this fellow in fear says, but I didn't say anything. And the fellow said, you did say something. And the fellow who's afraid says, you must be hearing things. Have you been to a psychiatrist lately? And the fellow said, what are you talking about, to a psychiatrist? I was sitting here enjoying myself and said, I ought to go down to Washington and wipe those dogs out. I was having a perfectly happy time sitting here griping about it. And you tell me that I wouldn't do so well in Washington. I got no business going to Washington. I didn't say that.
Well, what did you say?
Well, I just said I thought Washington was a bad town to live in.
That isn't what you said. You know that isn't what you said.
Yes, it was. Have you been to see a doctor about your hearing lately? See? Carve, carve, cut, cut, cut. But I haven't said anything. I'm perfectly justified in what I say because, after all, I, and this person who is afraid, by the way, he'll be the first one that will tell you, you know, I am an honest person. I am ethical. I'm very honest and ethical. I never do anything illegal, and therefore I wouldn't tell you a lie, and that's why I'm telling you you ought to go see the psychiatrist. That's typical modus operandi. Anytime a person starts talking about how legal and ethical he is, jump. Because he's right here in this band. Now, your angry man thinks in terms of destruction. He's a very easy person to figure out. But you come up to this angry man and you say, we've got this terrifically enthusiastic project and we're gonna, and he says, who said you could? And you say, well, we got permission from the cops and the mayor and everything. And he says, God, I wish I hadn't voted for him this last election. But you say, what about this terrifically enthusiastic project that we're going into? Police chief isn't any good either. You try to get this guy into communication. You try to talk to him. And you somehow or other can't convince him that you're in an enthusiastic project. But he'll get mad at you after a while because you aren't listening to what he's mad about. In other words, you're getting more or less of a pattern response there. Same with antagonism. Now, in boredom, have you ever read the New Yorker magazine? You read the New Yorker magazine? New Yorker is a sort of an analytical level nullification. They've cut out newsprint all over the country, and it's astonishing, but the New Yorker is still being printed. And they say in the New Yorker magazine, you say to the New Yorker magazine, we got this great big enthusiastic project and we're going to rebuild, and the New Yorker magazine finds a typographical error in your statement. That's it. Don't try to sell them any big enthusiastic project. So you go to this fellow that's very conservative and you say, we got this great big enthusiastic project, we're going to, well now, boys, have you thought about, have you planned this carefully? And by the way, by the time you get through talking to this fellow, you wish you'd hung yourself. He's got so many reasons why you can't be enthusiastic about this project. But yet he's for it. Here's the guy you can sell this great big enthusiastic project. You come in, you say it's a great big enthusiastic project. And actually, you do have a good project. It's fairly logical. And you lay it down the line and you say it's going to be this and this and this. We're going to do this. And he says, yeah. And he adds something to it. And he makes it more of an enthusiastic project. He's the only one that you can sell to that way. What about the rest of these people? Are they completely out of contact then? If this verve, enthusiasm, so forth, let's take another approach. What's that fellow's name that's named after the library? This fellow. we'll take this system and we'll apply it to an angry man. The system whereby you smile, big smile, you smile, and you say, now you're going to do all the talking, and I'm going to do all the listening. And we'll name the company in your name. And what else do you do? I know, it's a very good system. It doesn't work, but it's awfully good. And so you come into this angry man and you say to him, big smile. And he says, what the hell are you smiling about? The system goes to hell. The book ended right there. And you're not quite sure what you're supposed to say next because it hasn't got a good index. I looked. It doesn't say anywhere in there, when confronting an angry man, So, but is there some kind of a system here by which you can sell an international harvester, a house, a gold brick, a golf game, anything? Can you get some agreement and cooperation from an apathy, from a grief, from a fear, anger, antagonism, boredism? Is there some kind of a method by which we can get good agreement so that they'll go along with us? Yeah. Boy, it's about as simple as it comes. Match the tone. Just match the guy's tone, that's all. You go in, you get used to this business, there's a physiological aspect about it. As a matter of fact, the angry man, the person who is more or less fixed on this tone, has a certain physiology. You can take a look at him. He looks domineering, commanding. He's the kind of a fellow that heads labor unions. He's all for this. Or he's the president of General Motors, as far as that's concerned, and all workers are dogs. And he's interesting from this aspect. You go in to sell this fellow, you want to sell this fellow something that he needs or wants, or you go in to do business with him one kind or another, you try to get him in on a contract, or you even try to play bridge with him, and or canasta. I'll have to learn how to play canasta. Anyhow, then maybe I become an angry man. Here's this fellow, and you say to him, it's a beautiful day, isn't it? Well, that isn't going to work. You walk in, there he is. You take a look at him. You listen to his voice tones. Take a look at his office help. You say, yep, he's right there at 1-5 on the tone scale. So the fella says, and I think they all ought to be stood up against a wall, and you say, and shot. And he looks at you and he says, soulmate. And you say, now who the hell do you think ought to be stood up against a wall? And he says, those dogs, that's who. And you say, well, it's just like this project. If we had this project, then we'd cut shoot them. And he says, what project? And you tell him, good straight frontal project. Oh, fix them. If you're building a city park, the reason you want to build a city park is to get even with those contractors that wanted the land. That'll fix them. Probably bankrupt the whole lot of them. You don't want it for the kids and to let the birds sing in. And you'll sell this fellow city park. He'll write out his check. And it's a sympathetic vibration. Did you ever see this physics class experiment where you hit one tuning fork and it goes bong, and over here is a tuning fork you didn't hit, so you damp out this one and this other tuning fork is going bong, the same note? Well, it's sympathetic vibration is what it is. You've got to talk along the sympathy line. But I don't mean the sympathy of grief. You've got to get the tone level that this person normally frequents. You could be fooled. You could go in and you look at this fellow and you say to yourself, well, he looks like a conservative old man and so forth. And you just say to yourself this, and you start talking to him more or less conservatively, and you say, and so we have this conservative project, this large conservative project, and it's going to do a lot of good, and it's going to make some money. You don't talk about it making anybody happy, but it does good, and it's practical. It's going to make some money and so forth, and you talk along like that, and the first thing you know, this fellow says to you, I don't think anybody had lived to use it in these times. You were wrong, see. Now, the apathy fellas, you say, of course, it probably won't do any good anyway, and the stuff we've got probably isn't any good, and may wind up to be a swindle, they usually do. Nobody's really trying to do anything about it. It isn't very active anyhow. There's no effort involved in it. No effort for you involved in it.
Probably the whole thing will wind up in a ruin. If you try to sell him an international harvester, you'd say most of them around the countryside are all broke. They don't last very long. Almost any competitor of ours is outselling us anyhow. They don't work. You'll say, well, give me one. Now, on the line of fear, all too often, an individual who's trying to do business with other individuals, who is trying to work with other individuals, will be so solidly fixed himself on the tone scale that he doesn't understand the necessity of trying to get into communication with another individual before he tries to do something with him. It's necessary to get into communication. The only way you can get into good, solid communication anywhere along this line is to get along the line on its own parity. So if a fellow is fear, let's take an insurance salesman. He's fixed at the line of fear. So he goes around and he tells everybody to be afraid. He tells them to be afraid in various ways. And he goes on selling this idea of be afraid, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. He's an excellent salesman if the community to which he is selling things has a predominance of people at this tone level. But he would completely flop if he were trying to sell it at this tone level. Supposing he were trying to sell it in the offices of the New Yorker magazine. He'd go in and say, be afraid, be afraid. So they put a cartoon in about somebody being afraid. They'd not be impressed and they would not react. In order to get a reaction, this individual fixed at the level of fear can only get a reaction at the level of fear. Now, educationally, this person could begin to understand that not everybody was at his tone level. But maybe there was somebody at apathy. Because you come in here and try to make the person who is apathetic afraid. You say, this person's in a deep apathy, and you come in and you say, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. You know, standard insurance sales arguments. And this guy just as soon be a... He'd like to be afraid. Afraid is two rungs up the tone scale. He isn't afraid. The only way you could sell him anything at all is to tell him that this is a recognition of the fact that there is no fear involved any place in the world anyhow. And there's no use in doing this stuff. And it doesn't have any end or purpose. But people would sure think you were dead. This kind of an action, it really proves the fact, doesn't it, that a man is practically on his way out to have a policy of this size. So I'd say, yes, it does. Where's my fountain pen? But you can't sell it to him because, you know, you ought to have this because you're going to die and your wife is liable to be left penniless. Apathy case. Wife? Why, he hasn't gotten any emotional response about anybody else but himself for so doggone long. You can't sell him anything about any other part of his environment. You can't even sell him well on himself. He's very, very concentric with himself. He's way down there. You can be a little peppier with a grief case, but a fear case trying to sell a grief case, this grief case will just stampede and drop into apathy. And an apathy case, you can't sell anything to anyhow. The best thing to do would be to try to raise it up to a fear case, if you were a fear case yourself. But the easiest thing to do, the grief case, is sitting there saying, it's all hopeless. There is no future. I wouldn't bring a child into this world anyway. Things are pretty horrible over there in Europe anyway. I know when my husband used to beat me, I used to say. And the only thing you can do with this grief case is say, you poor thing, you poor thing. Of course, you say it in a lot of ways. You poor thing, we feel sorry for you. I feel sorry for you. Everybody feels sorry for you. Sign on the dotted line, everybody feels sorry for you. It's a fact. That's all a grief case can hear. It's almost useless to say, yes, I know, when my when my husband used to, my father used to beat me, and I used to feel, and she'll say, and he always used to say to me, and you say, and when he took my car away from me, I knew that life was pretty hopeless and so forth. And he often said to me, she'll say, when we were walking out to the barn, you know, I did have a love affair before I met him, but I gave him up. I had to be noble. Married my best friend. I thought it was for the best. But it's all worked out wrong. You're saying by this time you're trying to match grief. No, you can't match grief because grief doesn't listen. It's senseless when a person breaks down and starts to cry saying, it's all right, life is going to be beautiful, life is going to be wonderful, the sun will shine again, there's no use to be bereaved, because you can stand there and go yak, yak, yak for a long time. But the only thing you can do is to pat him on the shoulder and say, I feel sorry for you. Yes, everybody feels sorry for you. We pity you. And if you carry along in that line, this person will finally simmer down and smooth out very nicely. You can get a communication then by giving, because grief is a supplication and plea for pity. But on a fear level, as I said, there you can only sell things that prevent death. Here's where the political parties really come in. If they've got a populace which is predominantly in fear state, fixed state. I don't mean the populace is specifically afraid of something. I mean they're just in a fixed state of fear. They've been up against politicians a long time and they're scared stiff. And here you have fear, and somebody is saying all along the line to them, be happy and cheer up because all is well tomorrow. That fellow's not going to win the election. The fellow that's going to win the election from this populace is the fellow says, this is a time of emergency. The most stringent and terrible methods are necessary. We need price controls, and you mustn't listen to 5%. Who am I quoting? In other words, the country has to be saved. This has to be a great emergency because we are being attacked from all sides by enemies, and the subversives are coming in underneath and prying us apart, and the planes are coming over on top of us, and somebody is surrounding us with the submarines. But I'll save you from all this. The anger case will take care of the fear cases. Now, then the fear cases will eventually wind up and shoot the anger leader. It's wonderful. I mean, it's the most, you ever hear of the snake that ate himself up? He grabbed a hold of his tail and swallowed his tail and disappeared? Well, that's what happens. And this is a standard dictatorship set up. Populace afraid. They think there is an emergency, so they elect somebody in an anger level, and then everybody passes in his checks. Germany, Italy, how much proof do you need? Russia's on its way right now. You know, I wonder that anybody doesn't really evaluate that situation. If people had stopped talking so loudly about, well, we'll save you, America. It's going to cost you $965,762 billion in the next 2 weeks. But we'll save you. And because Russia is this and Russia is that, and we've got to really get in there, and we've got to have a 950-wing Air Force, and, you know, a very short time ago, I was reading statistically that this country could not support a 70-group Air Force, and now they got 163-group Air Force they're postulating. Wonderful. I mean, we haven't got enough oil and iron to build a 70-group Air Force, so now we're going to have a 663-group Air Force. This should give you some kind of an idea that we're drifting down the tone scale somewhere. But here's the play. Now, fear is a best appeal to by arguments about things to be afraid of. Anger is best appealed to about things to be angry about. But there's something else happens here. Domination is on the basis of about one skip. In other words, boredom can more or less damp out antagonism. Anger can control fear. Fear can play on down to grief. A little bit. If we're acting in terms of two people side by side, the one that will more or less be in command of the other will be the one that's a grade up from the other.
And by the way, from here down, you don't command the person into doing very much but interpolating you. You can get agreement and get action, however, anyway. Conservative people, uniformly throughout the society, depend almost exclusively upon the dreamer and the happy individual to provide the ideas and so forth to provide conservatism with its action. You've noticed that. Actually, there's a very conservative necessity to put something together well, but there's no reason why practicality can't be happy, but you get this domination. A populace which is at 2.5, which is just bored, can be ruled by a conservative government. Reasonable, practical, conservative government. But a society which is at 1.1 cannot be ruled by a conservative, practical government. It can only be ruled by an angry or an antagonistic government. Now, there is a behavior pattern for each one of these moods. Now we speak of, where is terror? Terror is just more fear. There is a thing called volume on this tone scale. Terror is more fear. Where's rage? It's just more anger. Where's sorrow? It's just less grief. See? I mean, there's just the gradient scale. We're just using other words that fit on the scale. Now, we say that an individual gets fixed at a position on this scale. He does. His pattern behavior will be at one of these levels. If he more or less gets fixed on one of these scales, how is it, then, if anger is only destructive, that this person ever makes any effective progress? Well, the fact of the matter is, his overall average shows that he doesn't make effective progress. He gives an apparent solid reaction to life in general. He will say, "And me and Herring and Garbage are going to make a great Germany. We're constructive." Look at Germany now. It's really been constructed, all right. But you'll get a lot of constructive talk and constructive justification anywhere along this tone band, but the overall average endeavor of an individual or society lying at the level of fear will be whatever it is that groups with fear as a fear reaction. And a lot of things group with fear as a fear reaction. Now, we have also something else at work. Although from 2.0 down, an individual tends toward succumbing. From 2.0 down, he tends to succumb more than he tends to survive. There is still an element in him which compels him to survive. One of the things that happens is he is surrounded by maybe individuals who are higher on the tone scale than himself, and they insist that he survives. They can't understand why he wants to die. This is silly. So we pass a law against suicide. All these boys up here, they say, obviously, people who commit suicide, would you commit suicide? No, I wouldn't commit suicide. It's impractical. Well, the people who commit suicide, then, it's a crime against the state. Yeah. So they put a law on the books, and they say it is against the law to commit suicide. And that takes your person down here along the line of grief and apathy. Apathy isn't active enough to commit suicide. You'll get suicide. If this fellow dives suddenly to grief, he's liable to commit suicide. If this fellow dives into grief suddenly, he'll commit suicide. And a grief is liable to sit right in front of you and say, "Yes, I feel fine. I feel fine. I'm all right. I'm much better today. Would you go get me a magazine I'd like to read?" And you walk out and get the magazine, come back in, find the corpse. James Forrestal was never more pleasant than when he sent the hospital corpsman away from his door so he could jump 16 stories to the skylights below. Psychiatry, excuse me for using a I shouldn't use dirty words. Forgive me. Some of the doctors there in charge of his case had walked in and had found him in a rather antagonistic and angry mood. And they had been able to suppress him down into this band. They left him there and walked out and thought they'd done a good job. Nobody encouraged his anger or his revolt. He was the best brains the Navy ever had. The Navy has really, frankly, lost its identity since Forrestal went out. And nobody encouraged his anger. Nobody tried to bring him up any tone scale. They just gave him a shove to cheer him up, and he went out the window. So that you get anybody in this band here, and you give them a quick impact of loss, and they're liable to die or commit suicide. Now, they have many ways of committing suicide besides just getting blowing one's brains out. There's the committing suicide on the slow route, such as getting sick and dying of an infection. There is the slow route of starvation. Not eating the proper food or the right food eventually will result in malnutrition, which is another name for a partial suicide. And they'll cash out that way, or they'll drive down the road in an automobile on Sunday and commit suicide in that fashion. Although it's a terrific accident, you understand. They wouldn't be able to explain it to you any other way than that it was an accident. If you met them up at the pearly gates, you say, "What happened to you?" And they'd say, "Accident." It was very funny. Why did you have an accident? You knew that you had a soft tire day before yesterday. You saw the nail in the tire. You knew you had this tire, and you knew that the king bolts on the front end were practically ready to fall out. Last week, the mechanic told you that. Let me see, did he? Why didn't you have them repaired? Oh, no, you wouldn't have anything repaired like that, which was such a beautiful suicide trap. Leave them. And then there's no blame to having committed suicide. I mean, just commit suicide. Boom. That's, by the way, your source of accidents. When you look at this scale, you realize that it's very funny that these things apparently line up and can be extrapolated from so many observational sources. There is actually an energy behavior involved here. There is a life energy which becomes highly interbulated as it gets down. It becomes more and more interbulated. Here, up here, it's very smooth, and then down here, it gets very jagged. By the time it gets down here, it is nulled. Its wavelength is such that it isn't operating. It's kicking out of the material universe. You get death. It's separation. And this is the mechanism of death. Up here, it's very smooth and aligns itself very easily with the material universe so that you can have a nice, smooth-running organism. Down here, the mechanism of death is set in, which is this life energy gets kicked back out of the mist by this jagged vibration. Actually, you can measure the vibration level, I am very sure. I wish I just had just a few days on some testing equipment to get its proper wavelengths. Its wavelengths exist, but you can watch it in its operation. These are just descriptive words which might better be stated in terms of 0.03 such and such vibration or wavelength, centimeter, something of the sort. 3 centimeters. Who was telling me about that the other day? Anyway, you got a gradient scale at operation here. Now, if you start looking for every conceivable kind of behavior that is a general class of behavior to which a man could operate. Let's take the class of behavior involving marriage, the class of behavior involving the care of machinery, the class of behavior involving ethics, law, any one of these things. You can compare this to the individuals concerned in that class of behavior. You'll find out, for instance, in handling machinery. You can put this to test. You can go out and take a look at a man's car.
You find out it's got a dented front fender. The car looks sort of muddily unhappy. It's not in very good mechanical condition. You just take a look at that car.
This fellow's obviously active enough to have a car, isn't he? Normally, you'll boost him up here. And you've got him located to that degree on the tone scale just by looking at a messed up car. What will this man do to some machinery in a plant? You put this man on a machine in the plant. This machine's been running. It's been having a happy time of it. It's been sitting there purring along, all contented, punching holes in a big piece of iron and chomp, 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 chomp. This guy, Chip Jobs, this guy all of a sudden takes over that machine. For a day, it's there, and it says chomp, 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 chomp. And then the funny thing happens, but a coal chisel happens to be lying on one of the pieces of steel that's being fed into the machine. Strange, but of course, it's pure coincidence. So the machine comes down, chomp, chomp, chomp. It can cut the soft steel, but it hits this coal chisel and it goes crunch. Pieces of coal chisel fly in all directions, and the chomper is broken. And the fellow, you'd say to the fellow, what happened? Nothing, it's just a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, that somebody else put it on there. You're not going to get the straight story from this fellow. So you have another chomper fitted on this thing. The machine's out of operation for a day. That throws out the assembly line all the way down the line. So the next day, the machine is sitting there, and it's going chomp, chomp, chomp. The superintendent comes by. He notices that for some strange reason, the floor in this particular area is dirtier than it ordinarily is. There's more scraps on it. And he doesn't think very much about it, but it seems to stay that way. Doesn't get swept. Well, there's a perfectly logical explanation for this. Every time the floor sweeper comes along, this fella says, "You're making too much dust." And he just doesn't sweep under that machine. Now, this gadget with the new chomper is going chomp, 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 stuff being fed to the assembly line. It goes down through this line, and finally gets down to the assembly line, and then there an inspector says, "Hello, what happened?" Well, it so happened that when this fellow turned the machine on again, he set the dial at 52 millimeters, whereas the dial was supposed to be set at 75 millimeters. And all the holes that have been chomped are too small, but they can't be chomped again because the chomper won't take them that way anymore. So you throw away that metal. So it goes. It's a very funny thing what you can do with this fellow, too. You go take a look at his machine, take a record of the breakage of the machine, take a look at the floor under the machine, and then knowing what his wife looks like. Well, she hasn't got messed up, but she will be, have been driven here, ordinarily, or lower. He succeeded in putting her down the line. Now, in other words, the care of physical things and possessions, or the physical universe and so forth, deteriorates as you drop down the tone scale. When you get down below 2.0, you start into the band of where you get breakage. So on. Here you've got destruction at work. By the way, this is not just on my say-so. I can walk into a plant and look over somebody's equipment and say, "Well, how long has it been since he had an automobile accident?" The fellow say, "Oh, about 3 weeks." "You know this guy?" And you say, "No. No, I don't know him. Was he elected in the local union election the last time?" "Yes, as a matter of fact, he was." "Don't you know this guy?" And you say, "No, I don't know this fellow. Tell me this. His locker downstairs down there is just crammed from top to bottom with junk, isn't it?" "Yes, as a matter..." "All right, what are you trying to pull around here?" It'll just follow secretly. Also, you say this fellow's health record demonstrates that he has arthritis. Well, it's all very funny because his health record says he has arthritis. Only if another one, you miss on that one sometimes, and actually he's got a collection of Lyme or a sedimentary deposit in the kidneys, or it's tumors, or it's some disease, but it's sedimentary. It's collective. This fellow is attacking still the environment around him, but he'll hold in the line, sort of frozen and tensed up, some of the fluid flows of his body, and he'll get these depository illnesses. You can spot these fellows, one right after the other. You can tell such things as he went to the bank and he borrowed some money. He meant to pay it back. Honesty was the best policy and all that sort of thing, but he didn't. Down at the school, his kids aren't doing well. You can practically look at this fellow and you can tell what his kids' grades are. They're not doing well at all. You know what his machinery's like? You know what his attitude toward sex is? You know what his attitude toward children is? You know what he'll be in the group? The group will always mistake a person who has some horsepower at this level for a leader. And this person will inevitably destroy a group. Labor has been sitting around like little sheep about to be driven to slaughter, and this fellow stands up and he says, I'm going to save you now from these managers, this company management. I'm going to save you. And they all say, I vote yes. He's got to be the chairman. So forth. And he'll talk. Boy, he looks like force, power. There's another interesting thing. The body is part life energy and part physical universe. Life energy is rational. Physical universe has force. When you get down below 20, the individual starts running on more force than he does life energy. You get down below this anger band and the individual starts to believe in force, punishment drive theory, so on. That falls down below this band. Above this band, you get enlightenment. Here you get your subversive, by the way, politically. This fellow doesn't run the union. He runs the guy who runs the union. Sure, he's covert. In short, with this lineup of emotions, it is possible to extrapolate various behaviors on the part of individuals for various headings. You have on your tone scale chart, the full chart of human behavior, an extrapolation for many kinds of behavior. But this chart could be extended a great distance and still would be found to hold true. Now, I told you more or less the theory behind it and the workability of it. The only reason in this highly scientific and practical and conservative world is the only reason for existence or value that a thing would have would be how useful it was, whether or not it worked, whether or not it were useful. This material definitely is useful on such an application. A salesman, knowing it well, can size up a prospect. And a salesman who is too neat, for instance, he won't sell people below 20. You know, it's right there, and it says right in all those books on salesmanship, it says the salesman must be neat. Not to sell below 20. That salesman, if he wants to sell an angry man, he'd better look like one. In other words, he gets an agreement somewhere on the scale. He actually can sell a person at this level something that will break and cause an accident faster than he can sell a practical machine. That's very interesting. He doesn't have to paint it up that way very far, but if he just gives a few hints, that machine will be bought. And yet the salesman is taught to say, my product is the best product. It lasts the longest. It is the safest. He's got his sales talk all lined up. There's a sales talk for each one of these levels. And the sales talk is here, well, This machine keeps the pebbles from coming up under the seat. And you know, in the McCormick, as a matter of fact, they don't have this guard. And the pebbles, there's never been a pebble up through that in the sea. This guy's never seen it, but it's something new to be afraid of. That's the way you saw it. You say, when this thing breaks down, it is almost impossible to diagnose the trouble. Gee, you'll buy that quick. Sounds strange, but it's something that one learns with experience how to put into use. Would you like to ask some questions about tonight's talk? Yes.
At what point on the folk scale is behavior possible?
What point is it postulated?
What point is behavior postulated? How many free fives can we observe? What point does the behavior of a free five postulate or have to observe this behavior?
Oh, you're talking about high-level tone scale behavior. Yes, I have observed this behavior. As a matter of fact, you have too. We get cynical with this chart. Everybody has a certain number of aberrations. Almost anybody can be interpolated. But when a person is coasting along fairly cheerfully, happily, life is going fairly well for him, he has in his vicinity those things which he needs to survive, and he has absent from him those things which aren't. He doesn't interpolate down to his chronic level. He'll ride at a high level. He'll ride consistently at a high level. Don't hit him with a straw, though, because he'll go... But you can watch him riding at this level. Whereas the least bit interpolated, you've just come in and told him the price of postage stamps has gone up 1 cent per million. This is a tough one. That was all it took to break the beautiful crystal of his day and spin him in. Now, 3 minutes before that, if you had given him a letter and you'd say, would you have mailed this for me? He'd say, why, sure, I'd be very happy to. And go ahead and mail it. And then he finds out that the price of postage stamps have been raised 1 cent per million. Whew. Here he is. And you say, would you mail this letter? Sure. That's the end of that letter. In other words, you've got two levels of behavior. Let's not overlook the fact that individuals have been known to be happy, even though aberrated. Now, completely aside from this point, I have seen individuals well enough swamped up on the one hand, and I have seen individuals so unaberrated on the other hand that they behaved along this 3-5 band up here. Constantly, consistently, give them a letter, they mail it. You see, your low bands interrupt communication. Say good morning to them with a happy smile on your face, and they can say good morning right back with a happy smile on their face. And you say, I made an extra $25 yesterday, and they said, well, are you sure it isn't counterfeit? Or they don't say, you know, Bill made 26. They say, gosh, that's good. Strange human reaction, I know. But these people exist. Now, we don't see them around the foundation very much because the auditors get interpolated from the pre-clears and so on. But I have observed this behavior. The extrapolation holds good all the way along the line on that. I worked on this chart rather constantly, actually not knowing what I had my hands on for about 3 years until I finally crystallized the thing, and then it was under observation for about 4 months with a lot of people. Of course, I will admit that it was much better observed at the bottom of the tone scale than the top, since it was observed in Los Angeles. Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Fancy term for that's called abreaction of one's hostilities. The only trouble with that term, abreaction of one's hostilities, is the fact that one doesn't just abreact hostilities. So it's a limited concept. The point is that a person at 2.5 experiences his pleasure by being 2.5. A person who is a 1.1 gets a big kick out of the fact that he's inflicting some fear on somebody. He's making somebody afraid. And he thinks this is funny. And you can get laughter off of the levels where the person is. There you get laughter. Now, here is humor. And the field of humor lies here rather wide open when you take a look at it. For instance, anger is the good old German humor of ha-ha-ha, good joke. Mother was standing at the top of the stairs, and somebody gave her a swift kick, and she fell clear to the bottom, and she got a fractured skull, and hilarious, you know? And this is your comic strip humor. I wonder why it has such a wide appeal. It doesn't have that humor anymore. There isn't any humor in comic strips anymore. I've been studying them. They're all about Flash Gordon shooting Hopalong Cassidy or something. They're all dramatic, and they're all named after movie heroes, the last I've seen. How far can we go with commercialism? Well, this is interesting here to watch a person who is... A person, by the way, can ride at 0.5. They're not crying all the time. They're just kind of sad and hopeless. And to watch a person at 0.5 extract humor from the fact that he has occasioned sympathy or grief. Somebody, well, how did she feel about it? Oh, she cried. She cried for a long time. Didn't do her any good, though, of course. Tears ran down her cheeks. Yeah. Wonderful to watch humor taking place. You maybe know these people that I've talked about. The people that you know normally, the people to whom you know best, probably fall along this band here. You probably know the conservative man. General conservative attitude and so on, a slight reservation toward everything. You certainly know the New Yorker. You know this general sort of sniping antagonism continually, and you know this one. This is the fellow that went around and told the boss that you had been fired from your last job, but he didn't want the boss to know about it. That's what he told the boss. And he said that you were a good fellow after all. And then he stood up for you because he was your friend. And he said, somebody said you weren't fit to eat with pigs, and he said you was. Okay. Well, let's save it till tomorrow night. Thank you very much.